I believe that the Lord God created the universe. I believe that he sent his only son to die for my sins. And I believe that ancient Jews built boats and sailed to America. I am a Mormon, and a Mormon just believes. You cannot just believe.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Kay Birmingham, who is a civil trial attorney with over 25 years' experience in California and Utah, representing both corporate defendants and individual plaintiffs. Born and raised in Bountiful, Utah, she was a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints for most of her life until resigning from the church in 2001. She's the author of An American Fraud, One Lawyer's Case Against Mormonism. Welcome to Background Briefing, Kay Birmingham.
Thank you, Ian.
And Kay, you left the church have obviously written a book I don't think particularly flattering towards the church. But I believe that you are among what, 1 to 1.5 million Mormons who have resigned from the Church of Latter-day Saints since 1995.
Yes, I think that's an approximation. Of course, the numbers aren't specific because the church doesn't like to keep records of who leave. And so you will find, if you look especially at the Trinity College study that came out about a year ago now, that the LDS Church constantly overreports its membership. And if you go to the Trinity College study, there's about half as many LDS in the United States as the Mormon Church records would indicate.
So we started out, of course, with a musical clip from the musical Out Now, or the Book of Mormon. But much of what you've written about, Kay Birmingham, in An American Fraud, One Lawyer's Case Against Mormonism, has to do with the divinity of the Book of Mormon. As recently as 2003, the then head of the church, President Gordon Hinckley, said, "Each of us has to face the matter. Either the church is true or it is a fraud. There is no middle ground. It is the church and kingdom of God, or it is nothing." What would you say?
Well, it's interesting because when people hear that, the average Mormon members, they think of it as just a rhetorical statement that certainly this church that I've loved and grown up in has to be true because I've borne my testimony since I was a young child. I've borne witness that Joseph Smith was a prophet of God and this is the one and only true church. And so they don't think about what the content of that statement might in fact be doing, which as a trial attorney, you encounter this all the time, and that is giving notice to the people that the church could be a fraud or is based upon fraud, thereby starting the running of the statute of limitations for any claim against the church for fraud, for misrepresenting its origins. And that's just one thing that I find very disconcerting about the LDS hierarchy and the way they play the naivete and their ability to manipulate the membership for their own purposes and in order to increasingly gain wealth.
Well, specifically, the founder of the church, Joseph Smith, the whole thing is fairly requires a certain suspense of belief, suspense of disbelief, I should say, with these golden tablets that mysteriously disappear and all of this stuff and the Egyptian papyrus, which turned out to be a fraud, etc.
Right.
My understanding, actually, from the historian William Manchester, is that the book itself was a stolen manuscript of a 19th century science fiction writer who Smith stole it from a rooming house in Atlanta. So, I mean, it's possible the whole thing itself is simply a plagiarized on top of questionable nature of its content.
Right, and there's all sorts of theories about where Joseph Smith and or his colleagues, so to speak, who were all in the golden Bible business or the gold book business, as it was called back then, got their information or their storyline or their sources. And in fact, there's a really recent book that came out that compares the percentages of the books of The Adventures of Marco Polo, a really old version, I think it was 1808, and shows similarities in a certain portion of the Book of Mormon that track, whether it's numbers or names or storylines, the Book of Mormon. So there's all sorts of different theories on how Joseph Smith and his buddies came up with the Book of Mormon, but the one thing that is absolutely clear is it's not what it purports to be and what the leaders tell its members, and that is that it's an engraving on golden plates in ancient Reformed Egyptian of the history of early American prophets that was buried and that was located by Joseph Smith after an angel told him where to find it. He dug it up, and he translated the Book of Mormon from those plates. That has absolutely been proven to not be the case.
Surprise, surprise. So, I'm speaking with Kay Birmingham, a civil trial attorney who was a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for most of her life until resigning from the church in 2001, and she's the author of An American Fraud, One Lawyer's Case Against Mormonism. Now, you have recently interviewed Park Romney, and now, of course, one would assume that he has to be a part of the Romney family. My understanding is that the Romneys are Mormon royalty with ancestors dating back to the earliest followers of Joseph Smith, including Parley Pratt and Miles Romney, who was the church's first architect.
That's correct. And there's an individual called Miles Park Romney, who's the common, I believe it's great-grandfather, of Mitt Romney and Park Romney. And he actually had to go to Mexico so that he could practice polygamy after 1890, and the manifesto was declared as a condition of statehood for Utah. And Park Romney is actually a friend of mine. He's written a really good book on Mormon epistemology.
Now, what's his relationship to Mitt?
A second cousin.
Second cousin, I see.
Yeah, so which I'm sure there are, you know, dozens of second cousins to Mitt, and I don't think they've ever met. But as one of many former Mormons, he's a sociologist and comments on the corrupt epistemology of Mormonism from the very beginning. You're not taught as a child that, you know, you should be honest or honor your parents, the basic truths that certain religions will instill in their children. Instead, children are taught to recite, Joseph Smith was a prophet of God, this is the one and only true church, even as a toddler, and they have no reason to really believe that, or they're not. It's just very corrupt. And so young people, and this is my theory, and this has been true with the leaders all along, from Joseph Smith, the original founder, to Brigham Young, and the way he abused the pioneers for his own gain in building up the Great Basin Kingdom through Joseph Smith, the next Joseph Smith in the Smoot hearings. B.H. Roberts spent 2 days, he was a church historian in the early 20th centuries, and he spent 2 days in front of the 12 apostles telling them that from his investigation, the Book of Mormon appeared to be a fraud and was not what it purported to be. And one of the 12 apostles said, well, is this going to help our prestige? And he says, no, this is not. And so they just said, well, then keep it quiet. And they sent him back east to, out of the way. So that,
right. And, of course, the 12 apostles are, there is the prophet who's the head of the church. He's called the prophet, and the board of directors, if you will, are the 12 apostles.
That's right.
And I started out the program by pointing out how our pathetic press and the feckless Democrats have not forced Romney to reveal his taxes and list of bundlers. And this other subject that's been off limits is his role as a member of Mormon royalty and his connection to the vast finances generated by tithing that the secretive hierarchy of the Mormon prophet and his disciples have at their disposal. I'd like to focus in on that if we could. I mean, Bloomberg had a story on Monday that was overshadowed by the storm that there are ties to Romney's money and having him essentially sheltered through the church as a tax avoidance scheme.
Right.
But there's also some speculation out there that as a venture capitalist, Romney had access to the vast financial float that the Mormon Church has, that these secretive group of elderly men control the tithing. There must be billions of dollars involved, right?
Yes, that's correct. And the church, although some people like to call it a corporation, it really isn't, and there's no accountability as there would be in a regular corporation to its shareholders, because they're just members and they donate their tithing. They don't invest. And so it's interesting. Nobody knows the extent to which Romney's assets, whether through Bain or other assets, are involved with the church. I do know there is one researcher who is working on a project for me who has found SEC filings that have Bain and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, through their corporation Soul, divesting themselves of stock in several different global companies on the same dates. And so you see a lot of these transactions in the SEC filings where those two are co-owners or have the same interests, and actually the transactions are absolutely similar or on the same date or almost identical. So I don't know. It would be interesting to be able to find that out, but nobody really knows, because the church quit reporting what it did with its money and how much money it took in decades and decades ago.
So what about the notion that it would seem that it sort of does sound a bit like a corporation, though, with this kind of the prophets being a board of director and the apostles being the board of director and the prophet being the CEO, and they do have all this money and they do invest a lot of it. I spoke recently with a popular radio commentator in Salt Lake City, who was actually, he had written a piece in Salon, I think it was, that some of the original tenets of Mormonism were fairly socialist, in the sense that these were pioneer communities that depended upon sharing solidarity amongst all of the settlers, of working together, and that he was decrying the fact that it's become so materialistic and there's some giant development that the LDS Church is involved in, that's building some huge mall full of all of the designer-labeled high-end consumption stuff.
That's absolutely right. But the church is headquartered and ruled by very, very smart PR men and attorneys. And there's not, you'll have to look really hard to find a theologian amongst them. They're very, very business-oriented. And because of that, and because they've been sued before, and they want to protect their assets, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints only exists as a trademark. It's a name that's owned by Intellectual Reserve, which is one of their companies. And it's always very difficult, if somebody wants to sue the church, to know who to name, because they very carefully try to separate the church business, that is the collection of income from the tithes and the donations, from the actual investing in, say, City Creek, which is the mall that you just spoke about. And that is under the organization called Deseret Management. And so it's a really, really complicated sort of conglomerate. And they've been very careful to sort of, you know, bright line the differences. But one has to, if you trace it all the way back to the very beginning, it all began with the tithes. So, but
as we said at the beginning, what surprised me, and you are a living testament to it, a lot of people are leaving the Mormon Church. I understand it's also true of Scientology, which it was literally founded by a science fiction writer. In this case, Mormonism was founded by a guy who stole a science fiction manuscript.
Well, yeah, and he was a lot, you know, in the church you grow up learning, oh, Joseph Smith was a young, ignorant, poor farm boy. He was a good man, young man, and God chose him because of his innocence. Well, actually, he lived very close to the Erie Canal in Palmyra, and it opened just during this time period when he claimed to have been visited by an angel, and he was a voracious reader. And if you look at the primary source documents, and I'm not the only one by any means who's written about this, and there are many scholarly historians. For one that comes to mind is D. Michael Quinn, who's really the expert on some of these primary sources. He read Captain Kidd's Adventures, he read Marco Polo, all these different things, and he had quite the imagination. And so it's really not a stretch to think that he could dictate something that could be his ultimate scam. And it's, of course, succeeded beyond I'm sure, his expectations.
Sure. But, well, just in the last minute then, I'm sorry to butt in, but does Mitt Romney believe it? I mean, we don't know what he believes. That's what's so disturbing about this, that he's either been lying to all of his supporters on the right through the primary period, and then suddenly on the first debate, he switched to becoming a moderate overnight. So he's either lying to the moderates or he's lying to the conservative backers of his ticket. So what's your sense? And because it's this, I mean, the religion does work for a lot of people. It's a very family oriented religion. So I'm curious to know. And that's what we don't know about this man. We don't know about what motivates him and how much he believes of this strange so-called theology of his religion.
That's exactly right. And he's, as you know, stayed away from issues addressing his belief. And whether he's a dupe, one of the people that believe it regardless, or a deceiver, one of the members of the hierarchy that are deceiving the rest.
Hello, do we lose you?
No, I don't think so. I'm still here.
Okay. So you said there's a dupe or a deceiver. He's one of the deceivers. Explain that.
Well, I'm only saying that I don't know, but whichever he is, he's not the kind of person that should be president of the United States.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Kay Burningham.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Kay Burningham, who's a civil trial attorney with over 25 years' experience in California and Utah, representing both corporate defendants and individual plaintiffs. Born and raised in Bountiful, Utah, she was a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints for most of her life until resigning from the church in 2001. She's the author of An American Fraud, One Lawyer's Case Against Mormonism. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And the conversation continues at Facebook / Ian Masters Media. I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.